Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
A lot for us to get into today, certainly. The hopeful return of baseball. We'll jump on that bandwagon in just a moment. Let's go around, say good morning, see how the guys are doing. And, you know, before we even do that, obviously things in the world are still very topsy-turvy, still very sensitive here in New York. A curfew is in place, and, you know, this is the new norm, at least for the moment. So as we say that, we welcome in Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Oh, Dave, my heart aches right now. You know, watching the news last night and seeing the Bronx literally be on fire. You know, there's just so much turmoil in our city and across this country. And, you know, I would just ask that all the people that want their outrage to be expressed by demonstrations, please do so peacefully. You know, we need peaceful protests at this point. We need to try to de-escalate the situation, Dave. It's not going to make it any better if these protests continue to turn violent. And I know it's not all the protesters. We're only talking about a few protesters and some people that are trying to hijack the protest for their own purposes. But I would just ask that if you're going to go out there and protest and demonstrate, just do so peacefully. And for those that don't understand what's going on, don't understand why the protests have been somewhat ugly, I would just ask your patience, your empathy, and try to seek understanding about what the issues are and why people are so upset.
And with the morning from Chris and dead on accurate, Chris, of and you can hear it in our voices. I mean, this is not the same show that we do every day where we're all excited and thrilled to, you know, get into discussion of what's going on in sports in the world. But we trudge forward, and this is what we do. And we turn to Rick DiPietro and say, good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Chris. I'm all right. I mean, a little bit worn out. Sad. I mean, you name it. I mean, the range of emotions, I think we've all felt it. Sad for what's going on now, and, you know, the people that are trying to hijack the message and are looting and, you know, burning down, you know, buildings and everything else. It's just, I mean, it gives people the opportunity to check out on what is a really important conversation that needs to continue. It makes me sad.
It's a very sad time. I mean, it's a heartbreaking time, and I said this, and I've said this a lot the last couple of days, and maybe it's unfair, but when these things happen in other places, you take notice and it upsets you. But when it happens in your backyard, when it happens where you live and you work and where your kids go to school, it I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it's unfair. I think, Chris, I think it makes it even that much worse, and that's where we are right now. I mean, this is not California. This is not Florida. This is here. This is in our home. This is in our backyard.
Well, Dave, there's a reason why they have the expression hits close to home. When something affects you, it's personal. And I think when you start talking about what's been going on in police brutality and social injustice and how black and brown communities have been marginalized in this country, you know, when these things happen, you know, you can point at it happening in other cities and in other communities, and it's easy to be dismissive of it because it doesn't directly affect you. But now I think people are a bit taken back by the public outcry from what happened to George Floyd over a week ago in Minnesota, and they're saying to themselves, this is a problem. And even though it doesn't directly affect me, it's still an issue that affects people that I know in my community. It's still an issue that affects the law enforcement in my community. And I think people are now starting to take it a little more personal. And watching all of these protests and demonstrations, it's not just black and brown Americans that are marching. There are white Americans there too. And they want their voices to be heard because they've had enough of it. And Dave, I want to believe in the best of America. And I want to believe that there are more people in this country that are anti-racism than people that are want to continue to the bigotry and the divisive rhetoric. I want to believe that there are more people that want to stand on the right side of history, that want to stand on the side of righteousness. And so I just want to encourage those folks out there that want to take a stand, do so peacefully so we can make sure that the message is clear and we can make sure that the movement is not diverted because of the violence that we're now seeing over the past week.
You know what's amazing too?
Yeah.
Dave, you know what's amazing too? And Pat Mahomes, I mean, he mentioned this in his statement. And, you know, we spent all this time, 3 hours every day, you know, breaking down whatever the sport is. But, I mean, most of, if not all the people that listen to this show that love sports, love their teams. You love the Giants, right? Absolutely adore the Giants.
I do.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Pat Mahomes, you know, said something in his statement that we talk about a lot in the show is, there are all sorts of benefits of playing team sports, right? Like you put your kids into team sports. It's, you know, obviously the physical activity. It's, you know, the competitiveness. But also it's, you know, having your kids on a team where it's a team. It's black, white, it's Jewish, it's Catholic. It doesn't matter. It's Asian. It doesn't matter. When they're on that team, they're all fighting for the same thing. In that moment, they're trying to win. And they're working together to make sure that happens. I mean, that really is what boggles my mind a little bit, is we spend all this time, you know, loving athletes and loving our teams. Well, why not take a page out of what those teams are doing? Working together, loving one another, going to battle with black, white, you name it. Coming from all, you know, all corners of the country to be a part of something and achieve a certain goal. That's another really, really important part of team sports that I think sometimes gets lost along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Of just this camaraderie and this, you know, it's us against the world. And, you know, the microcosm of sports has the potential, Chris, to be unbelievable. You know, right? Of just like, I don't care if you're black, you're white, you're green, you're purple, you're Jewish, you're Catholic, you're Muslim. It doesn't matter. But when you take the overview of the world right now, it doesn't feel like that at all.
Well, Dave, I think the team dynamic is interesting because you have this collection of individuals that are willing to sacrifice themselves for the betterment of the whole. And that's the part about our country right now where it feels a little bit off. I mean, when we look at what we're going through with the coronavirus and what's been happening over the course of the last 3 months and the fatalities and seeing how black and brown communities are disproportionately affected, and how so many essential workers have been losing their lives to try to keep our way of life going. And then you couple that with the optics of the George Floyd situation. Black and brown Americans have had enough. We're tired of it. We're tired of being forced to accept a second-class citizenship. You know, our contributions to this country are valued. You see that across the world of sports and entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
That's unquestioned. But yet, when we go to our communities, when we go to our neighborhoods, we have to worry about being brutalized by police officers. And at some point, this has got to stop. That's why you're starting to see so many athletes take a stand. And you just saw Trae Young out in Oklahoma participating in protests. I mean, Jaylen Brown down in Atlanta. Udonis Haslam in Miami. The list goes on and on. David Fizdale talking about the NBA Coaches Association and how they want to form a committee for social justice and reform. All of these different initiatives are geared toward one thing, Dave, and it's getting America to recognize our personhood. It seems like such a simple, basic right that should be guaranteed as an American, and we don't have it, and we're tired of waiting for it. It's got to change.
I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, you hit the nail on the head, and I think most people listening right now agree with you. I know I do. I know Rick certainly does. And, you know, we need change. We need change. And I will say this. It does feel, Rick, like you've had a lot of athletes, even more so than like really involved. Not a T-shirt, not making mention in a post-game interview, on the front lines, marching, protesting, helping clean. I saw down in Florida, some athletes were helping clean up some of the damage that was done. It feels
down
like
in Tampa,
the athlete is very, very, very much involved this time around.
Well, because of what you saw. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, it's what you witnessed. It's the 9 minutes you watched of, you know, George Floyd being murdered. I mean, it's it's right in your face. I mean, you got a chance to see it, and there's no, I mean, there's no well this or well that. There's no gray involved in this. I mean, it was murder. You saw what you saw, and I think it's a wake up call for everybody. I mean, especially white people, because I mean, again, I mean, we talked about this yesterday. You know, Dave and I being, you know, white men haven't had the same experiences as Chris Candy, and you know, I consider Chris a close friend, and we talked about different situations and everything else, but. You know, this was an opportunity with nothing going on, everyone at home, to sit there and with your own eyes watch George Floyd get murdered. And I know me personally and you, Dave, and how you could not be disgusted watching that, like the disregard for human life. Forget the color of his skin, just human life in general.
It was awful. It was one of the most painful things I've ever witnessed.
I couldn't believe I was seeing it. Like at the time when I saw it, I mean, I read... I actually didn't see it on the news. I actually saw it. I mean, I actually clicked on it Twitter and I saw what was written and I'm like, this can't be right. This can't be true. And then you're watching it and you're watching it. And I found myself watching it going, what are you doing? What are you doing? Get off of him. He's not moving. Get off of him. Get off of him. And no, he didn't until he was dead. And I'm like, I honestly still can't believe as we talk about it today on Tuesday that actually really happened.
Well, it did. And it was awful. And, you know, the country.
But just think about that, though, Dave. Fundamentally, I choose not to hate because I have enough on my plate. Like, it just takes too much energy to hate. Like, I can't deal with it. Like, it's a lot easier to be nice than it is to hate people. But of all the things or all the reasons, like, if you choose to be a hateful person, of all the reasons to hate somebody, how could you choose the color of someone's skin, which they have no control over? That's how they're born. You're going to hate someone because they were born that way? How can that be a reason to hate somebody? It's not something they did, something they said, but just because they're different. You'd be surprised too. You probably have more in common with someone that's a different color than you than a lot of people that are the same color as you.
I'm sure.
If you took the time.
I'm sure.
But Rick, you know people aren't going to take the time. You know they're not going to take the time. People are, I'm not going to say, I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but a lot of people in this country are intellectually lazy. And one of the easiest ways to differentiate somebody from yourself is skin color. And now there's a deep-rooted history of racism in this country, and we don't want to get into that because we're a sports show. But I will tell you this. There has been a pattern of abuse toward black and brown Americans for decades. I mean, ever since before I was here. And just continue to watch it unfold in my lifetime. It's gotten to a point where the frustrations are just continuing to boil over because we're not being heard. You know, we have leadership that just does not seem to be hearing us. And guys, I don't want to make this about politics. I don't want to make this about the left or the right or anything like that. But when you have leaders that are threatening force rather than showing empathy and trying to de-escalate the tensions across the country, that's frustrating. That's only infuriating the Americans that are trying to get the country's attention. We are dealing with a crisis right now, and I'm not talking about the coronavirus. I'm talking about the state of race relations. We're talking about police brutality. We're talking about injustice, inequality, things that every other American expects. We're begging for right now. And we just want you to hear our cries. And now you're seeing all of these athletes take their stance. It's one of those things that warms my heart because it seems like we do have a consensus on what it is that we want. It's just a matter of being able to get America to acknowledge that we have a problem that needs to be fixed. And so many people want to release statements. So many people want to talk about being an ally, but nobody wants to really talk about the issue. Nobody wants to say what happened to George Floyd was wrong, and we're no longer going to accept it. We are no longer going to accept racism. Those are the positions that we have to take in order to affect the change that we want to see. And it's going to take all of us doing that in order for it to happen.
All right, so why don't we take a couple calls, and then we'll get into the Major League Baseball. Obviously, Andy from America lighten the mood a little bit. We got Mike Tenenbaum at 11 o'clock, Jesse Rogers at 12 o'clock on where we are with Major League Baseball. So we have a lot to do. We'll get into the Knicks and the James Dolan internal memo as the show rolls along as well. 800-919-3776. 10 minutes from now, we'll get into baseball. And, you know, it may be a shortened season, a much more shortened season than we anticipated, but it sounds like there's a decent chance of that happening now. Let's go to a couple calls. We'll start with Mike in Canarsie. Mike, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're hanging in there, Mike.
Okay. Obviously, the protests and the riots, there's two big problems that we're facing. We're facing police brutality and racism, and we're facing oppression. I think everybody knows this. We're aware of it now. We have to fix it. The police brutality, just the other police departments coming together and saying that what happened to Floyd was totally wrong is a huge step in this country. Holding police accountable is going to happen. All these videos you see of police brutality, these guys are going to get jammed up, may lose their jobs or worse. That can be fixed. It's going to take time. Number two, oppression. How do we fix oppression? Is there actually going to be a dollar amount put on fixing oppression in this country? Are we going to have a bill? Are we going to pass a bill and print money to fix oppression? Are we going to have a oppression tax? I mean, what is there a dollar bill? Is there a dollar amount that these people want to get to feel that they are no longer oppressed?
I don't even know what that means.
No, I don't think it's a dollar. I don't think it comes down to that. I think what it comes down to is opportunities and resources in order to make sure that our communities are treated like the other communities in this country. That's really ultimately what it is. Right now, we're just talking about being able to have our lives. You know, police brutality and unarmed black and brown Americans being killed by police officers. That's the focus of this. But as we move past this, yeah, we do want equality. We want the same opportunities afforded to every other American. So, yeah, I don't think it's a dollar figure issue. I think this is a heart issue. And if all Americans are willing to search their hearts and take a stand against racism, I think that moves us toward the right direction.
I hope so.
Actually, what you just said, Chris, was part of the reason I was so surprised that MSG and the Knicks didn't make a statement, or one of the few that hadn't made a statement. With what the Knicks have done as far as equal opportunity, I mean, Steve Mills, Scott Perry, David Fizdale. I mean,
Derek Fisher.
They've hired.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've hired men of color. So, I mean, if anyone were not qualified, well, I mean, I would say the opposite. I mean, you are qualified. I mean, not to mention, you know, I mean, what percentage of NBA players are black or brown? I mean, your workforce is for the most part men of color. So you are qualified to make a statement. And it doesn't have to be inflammatory. I mean, I get you're trying to protect other relationships and everything else, but I mean, I don't know. It was weird to me that this would be the time where you chose not to, like, you're actually drawing more attention by not making a statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't understand.
By actually making a statement.
No, you're 100% right, Rick. I didn't understand why the Knicks are sitting this one out. Like, we talked about it on the show yesterday. We can't afford for any Americans to sit this one out. Everybody has to be involved with this fight against racism and systemic oppression. And so for the Knicks, I don't understand what they were looking for. It's not like you have to have some degree or you had to go to college to speak out against racism. It's not like you didn't turn on your TV and watch the video of George Floyd being murdered say that that was wrong.
Right. You don't need to be qualified to speak out against that. You need to be a human being, and you need to have eyes to realize
But that doesn't even feel like an opinion. What you saw, I mean, that there's
it's
no
factual,
opinion,
right?
Exactly. There's no opinion.
There's no opinion, but I mean, it just, I think what made me scratch my head was that, you know, as you think more and more and you see these statements being released by teams and everything else, I was actually more aggravated in certain situations with, like, you know, NFL teams making statements, just with how they handle the whole Colin Kaepernick thing, especially now because you have you know, an anonymous front office guy saying that the reason why we didn't, like, no one in the NFL signed him was because it was bad for business. But now all of a sudden you want to support the cause and everything else. That kind of aggravated me, but I mean, it really comes down to actions speak louder than words. And I mean, for the most part, with, you know, who the Knicks have hired or given opportunities to, their actions have spoke loud as far as being
look in the
equal
NFL.
Opportunity.
Look in the NFL. We talk about it all the time. Well, you know, there's a lack of black head coaches and GMs.
To the point where we need to incentivize.
Right. And it's startling and it's upsetting. And we talked about it before any of this, how something has to be done. Well, if you look at all the teams in the NBA, the Knicks are the last team that you would say that with. I mean, they feel dysfunctional at times. They feel like we don't know what direction they're heading in. But as far as being, you know, equal opportunist and allowing everyone a job, they've done that and more. And you'd think that of any team that would come out and say something, especially in this city, especially hearing that all the players were so desperate for some kind of a statement, I think they had an opportunity, and I think they let it get away.
Yeah, it was an opportunity, Dave, but beyond that, you just want to see them do the right thing. And doing the right thing would have been to release a formal statement speaking out against what happened to Mr. Floyd and speaking out against racism as a whole. Like, that would have been the right thing to do. Don't leave it up to Dennis Smith Jr. to participate in protests down in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and leave the burden to your players and to your staff members. This should be something that the organization steps up and does just so everybody can know that this is the clear stance of the company. And they just didn't do that for whatever reason. I just don't think that in this climate they can afford to take that position, especially when you got college kids like Trevor Lawrence going out on Twitter and making the statement that he did, or the basketball player for Ohio State who participated in the protests over the weekend peacefully and got arrested. We got kids that are teenagers, young 20-somethings, getting involved in the movement because they know what they saw was wrong. If a multi-billion dollar entity like the Madison Square Garden Company can't step up and say the right thing when all of these other people, kids, have the courage to be able to do that, then shame on them.
Well, the internal memo went around yesterday, and I don't understand why this would be put down. And it says, quote, as companies in the business of sports and entertainment, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters. And I just don't see it like that. I think people.
Yeah, but what would Dave? As far as, you know, relationships with the NYPD and everything else, like, put that aside for a quick second. Like, as far as how people view teams that put out statements, if you were to be critical of a team putting out a statement, what would the reason be? Like, if you were critical of an NFL team putting out a statement,
well, because they don't practice they're preaching here.
Okay, so of all the times now, with how, you know, poorly, you know, the Knicks have handled media relations, right, between Charles Oak, like, all the missteps, to have the opportunity now to do what's right first and foremost, but then how would anyone criticize? I mean, yeah, they're dysfunctional, but how would you criticize the Knicks for, you know, putting out a statement that rings hollow when they've actually at the forefront of giving everybody opportunities, regardless of skin color? Like, it would seem like you'd actually just draw more
right,
positive attention.
Because you have been on the front lines of employing the black and brown community, that you would be the team that people might look to as one of the leaders as far as this is concerned.
Because you actually practice
right,
what you're preaching.
Because you are doing the right thing.
I don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't
make any sense to me. I don't get why you choose now. Because, I mean, something that should be a positive, you know, pointing to what we just talked about, now is looked at as a negative. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I understand why people would look at it as a negative.
That doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's got to be some kind of reason, but it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to rationalize it myself, guys, and I'm not really coming up with anything. The only thing that I can think of is that they just don't want to condemn anybody through the statement that they make. But I don't know that you can walk that fine line when it comes to something like racism and police brutality. I don't know that's the right position to take. Again, this is all speculation. I can't tell you what the mindset of the individuals that crafted this statement was, but it just doesn't make any sense not to come out and take a stance against racism and against what we saw this past Memorial Day.
Yeah, but you're talking about, I mean, smart people. You'd imagine smart people in charge of, of one of the most valuable assets in professional sports, you know, coming up with a statement that does exactly that. Like, it doesn't have to be where you're, you know what I mean? Like, you could come up with a statement, a crafted statement that, I mean, maybe focuses on the fact that, you know, for us, and we've shown this with our actions, you know, Black lives do matter, and point to, you know, some of the positive things you have done. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be, you know, a statement that
yeah, I couldn't agree
is
anymore.
Inflammatory.
You didn't need to be salacious or inflammatory or I mean, it's pretty obvious right and wrong here. So get on the side that, of course, I'm sure they're on, make a statement, and for lack of a better term, be done with it. You have now drawn more attention to yourself by not making a statement than you would have if you just made a statement.
Guys, I'm just pointing this out. We're criticizing a sports franchise, well, two sports franchises for not making a statement about racism and police brutality. And we have the president of this country that refuses to make a statement about racism and police brutality. It's not as easy as we think it is, because it's an uncomfortable conversation for some people. And I don't understand. And you know what? I've been saying that it's an uncomfortable conversation that we have to have. But I was watching SportsCenter yesterday, and I watched Breonna Turner from the Phoenix Mercury. And she said she didn't understand why people were saying it's an uncomfortable conversation. It shouldn't be an uncomfortable conversation where we're talking about human rights and basic human dignity. Respecting all lives, treating people all fairly, equality, those shouldn't be uncomfortable conversations for all of us. They shouldn't be.
Well, I think it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because a lot of white people don't feel qualified to have the conversations. That's what makes it uncomfortable. Is that, I mean, white people, I mean, myself included, that haven't experienced what you've experienced, it becomes uncomfortable because there is, you know, you don't really know. You haven't lived it.
But I think you know right from wrong.
No, you know right from wrong. But I mean, this isn't just what's right from wrong. This is a serious conversation that needs to be had. And I mean, it's not easy, Dave. It isn't. The reality is, it's not an easy conversation to have.
Well,
sometimes sometimes it's not an easy conversation for Chris to have, and he's black. Chris is black, has gone through this, and he'll get attacked on occasion when he tries to make a really educated point that isn't necessarily what the person who's also black thinks. That's intimidating to a white person.
I'm never uncomfortable when it comes to conversations around race. I'm never uncomfortable about it. It doesn't bother me. You know, I recognize what the issues are. Some of the issues that we're talking about, I've lived them, unfortunately. So it's not an uncomfortable conversation, but I guess when it comes down to it, you know, when we start talking about being able to have justice for all Americans, it doesn't seem like it's an overly complicated concept. It doesn't. I mean, Greg Popovich talked about it a little bit in his statement. He said, the thing that strikes me is that we all see this police violence and racism, and we've seen it all before, but nothing changes. That's why these protests have been so explosive. But without leadership and understanding of what the problem is, there will never be change. And white Americans have avoided reckoning with this problem forever because it's been our privilege to be able to avoid it. That also has to change. And so while you may feel like you're not educated enough to have the conversation, it's your responsibility as an American to become educated about it, not to be ignorant about race relations, so you can understand the perspective of others. And we can do something to push back against racism in this country. That's why it shouldn't be an uncomfortable conversation. It should not be. This should be a conversation that everybody grows comfortable with having.
And I would say, even if it's uncomfortable, it seems like it's very necessary. So comfort, you know, out the window now. It's what needs to be done. And you have the platform now because it's very much in the discussion. I mean, it is the number one story in this country right now. Even more so than a virus, which has killed well more than 100,000 people, this is the number one story.
Yeah,
but there are some things involved in the conversation that we'll never truly understand because we'll never have to experience.
And you're right, but it doesn't mean you don't feel a way about it. It doesn't mean that there's not a right way about it.
Of course, as well.
But yeah, again, I'm speaking I'm speaking in generalities. I'm not speaking for myself. This is not for me an uncomfortable conversation to have because, I've been a part of teams with black, white, whatever it is. I have, you know, close friends that are black and brown. I mean, on this show, between, we have Chris, we have Ray Santiago, like, so what I understand, and I don't have a problem having these conversations because I actually enjoy just listening and hearing it from you guys because I haven't experienced it. I'm just saying the reason why a lot of white people feel uncomfortable is because they don't truly get it. They don't understand because they've never been through it because their experiences are completely different. Like, I think a lot of people have the mindset, well, you know what, when I get pulled over, I put my hands on the steering wheel, cop comes up, I give my identification, I give my insurance, they write me the ticket, and then that's it. So why can't that just be the case? Well, because that's not the case, but but you don't know that because you've never experienced it. You know what I'm saying? But now getting a chance for you to see what you saw, now I think it gives you more of an understanding of what's being talked about. That this stuff happens, and it's for, you can't explain this away. There is no ifs or buts, or, you know, there's no, it shouldn't have happened, period. The man was murdered for no reason. Like, that's clear as day.
It is. I mean, there's not,
I just hate that this happens. I hate this happens because
it's awful.
You see the innocence of your kids in how they approach everybody. It makes you happy. It puts a smile on my face. It really does. And the fact that, you know, this is not something that you're born with.
No.
This is something that's learned. This is something that's taught.
It's a learned
behavior.
But
that's the encouraging part, though, Rick. What you just said is the encouraging part, because if you're not born with it and it is something that you've learned, you can unlearn it. You can learn to love. If you can learn to hate, you can learn to love. And learning to love comes a lot more naturally to us. So I just, the fact that this is something that you're not born with, it shows us that this is something that we can work past if we all commit to it. And I guess that's the point of all these protests and demonstrations. We need all Americans to try to commit to fighting racism in this country, to fighting for equality.
Team. Yes, you're 100%. That's what
we need.
Because in all actuality, the biggest difference you can make is to have a conversation that shouldn't be uncomfortable, because that conversation should be with your kids.
Yeah.
And with your wife and teaching them. Cause they're not, no, you're, I mean, you're born with, you know, overwhelming, like my kids are born. The first thing they want to do is love you. Anybody. Like, you actually have to, like, you know, Dave, I'm sure you've experienced the same way when your kids are young. They'll go up and hug anybody.
Oh,
like, whoa,
God.
Whoa. And you got to teach them, like, no, you can't just go walking up to strangers, but they've been innately, they want to love.
Of course.
And it's just to teach them and guide them that not everyone's the same. Not every white person's the same. Right? And they need to understand that early. It's just, it doesn't make them any better or worse. It just makes them, they're different. Everyone's different.
Everyone's different. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go or where you don't go, for the new way that the world, in fact, is working. All right, so guys, maybe a little good news on the Major League Baseball front, Rick. And we'll talk to Jesse Rogers, ESPN.com, right at the start of the 12 o'clock hour, and he's the one that has a lot of the details, the information on this. Sounds like we could have a really shortened season where guys truly get a prorated salary.
Yeah, I think it'll be somewhere in the middle. I mean, if they want full prorated salaries, I don't think it'll be 82, and I don't think it'll be 50. I think it'll be somewhere in the middle. Unless at a certain point players decide, okay, you know, we'd rather play more games, but we're not going to get 100% of our prorated salaries in order to get that done.
Yeah, it doesn't,
I think a deal gets done. I honestly believe a deal gets done.
I've always thought that.
It just feels like they're so far apart, though. I mean, the players had a 114-game proposal 2 days ago, and then the owners, I guess, through the media, decided they were going to leak their ideas, which was a 40- to 60-game schedule. To me, it just seems like they're so far apart in terms of what the players will be compensated and the number of games that will be played. I just don't know where they find the common ground. And I don't want to be pessimistic about it because I want – all live team sports to come back, but it just doesn't feel like they're working together. They don't have the same cooperation between owners and players that the NBA has or that the NHL has. Now, of course, those circumstances are a little bit different because both of those sports played the majority of their regular seasons and the players have got the majority of their checks. But with baseball, they haven't even gotten started yet. And it just feels like this is an insurmountable hurdle just based on how far apart they are on the compensation. And then we also have to factor this in. I mean, what the owners are proposing would be the players only getting paid 30 to 33% of their salaries. You know, if they're only playing, you know, 50 games and you're playing a third of the games, then they're going to get a third of their salary. I don't know that all the players are going to think that it's worth the risk of being infected with coronavirus to go out there and play the game. So I think that there are a lot of dynamics here and based on the position of the two sides, I don't know how they come together and get this thing done.
Yeah, but I think, again, this is the owners trying to win, which they usually do in the court of public opinion. So now just further emphasizing the fact that this is less about player safety to the players and more about how much money they're going to get paid. Because of what you just said. Is it worth only getting 30% to go back? Well, I mean, players just let you know it's worth 70%. We'll play 114 games. We'll give you 2 years of extra playoff teams. We'll even throw in a home run derby and an all-star game just to try to make more money. I mean, I really believe. I mean, when you look at – so they had the prorated 82, which is what the players want, which is 50% of your salary. Owners had the sliding scale, which was ridiculous. And then 114 is 70%. Owners saying 50, that's 30%. I really believe like you probably come somewhere in the middle of that.
Well, it feels like, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, Chris, but it kind of feels like we're narrowing the gap a little bit, right? We go from this ridiculous offer from the owners to an equally ridiculous offer from the players, and now it kind of feels like we're narrowing the sides a little bit. And I agree with you, Rick. I think at the end of the day, I know you don't, Chris. I think at the end of the day, we get it done. But would you agree that we're narrowing the gap a little bit, or do you think it's as far apart as when we started this thing?
I think it's as far apart as when we started this thing. I mean, I thought we had an agreement in place at the end of March. So did the players. Apparently they didn't. Now, I know that there's the clause that the owners had in there that they would have good faith negotiations if it was revealed that they weren't going to be able to have fans in stands for the majority, if not all, of the season. But apparently the players didn't feel like that necessarily meant that they had to accept whatever new proposal that the owners came with. And now it just seems like things are at an impasse. Like, I mean, the players had a 114 game schedule that was supposed to start at the end of June. And the owners are now saying, no, we're going to play, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of 50, 60 games if you demand your pro rata salaries. Again, guys, I want to be optimistic, but I just don't see that happening. And based on what we're hearing from Tony Clark and the MLBPA, they're not going to budge in terms of what they believe their players should get paid just because they recognize the risk that their players are going to have to take. And let's keep in mind, the owners aren't taking the same risks as the players. They're not. And you think about that in conjunction with the fact that the owners aren't being transparent with the players in terms of the actual losses that they're going to have. The owners are just floating out a number in hopes that the players would be willing to accept that that's the money that they're going to lose. But the owners aren't opening the books to the players. I think this would be a completely different conversation if everybody put all their cards on the table, but the owners aren't going to do that. They'd rather fight this battle in the court of public opinion. And to me, that just seems counterproductive, especially with the climate of what we're dealing with in this country with the coronavirus.
Yeah, I think to Jeff Passan's point, I mean, what he had said, and it's 100% true. I mean, it's tough to have conversations about money when the sides don't trust each other. I mean, it starts with trust. And, you know, the other thing to take into account, too, is, you know, how does, you know, this deal or the MLBPA's deal, how do they all of a sudden now bake into the equation what happens if we do at some point have fans in seats? Mm. And how does that affect how much money we're being paid? That's why deferral seems like it makes sense.
Right.
You know, some kind of escrow makes sense. But I think the one thing that's clear to me in this new, and it hasn't been proposed yet, the 50 games, or just the less games would mean to me, is that the biggest incentive for the owners right now is to get the money for the playoffs and the World Series. Mm. That's where they'll make a majority of their money this season. And how do we get to that? How do we lose the least amount of money possible having regular season games to get us to the point where we're actually making money in the postseason?
Right.
Right.
But if you have this shortened regular season to the extent that the owners want to go, it jeopardizes the integrity of the season. I guess that's understandable in the year that we're dealing with, but I mean, you're talking about getting rid of two-thirds of the regular season. Is it really going to feel like the playoffs? Is it really going to feel like, I don't know, a championship-worthy season?
Well, you're going to expand the amount of teams that get in. So if you've had you're right. You're going to play 50,
I don't think they care.
60 games.
You think Major League Baseball cares?
I'm not saying that the owners care. This is strictly from a fan or player perspective. I know the owners don't care.
I think the fan will listen. When you get baseball back and you're sitting there watching, you know, Yankees, Red Sox, I think that a lot of the "I hate this" will go away. Not all of it, because 55 games or whatever the number is going to be it's not even the same sport almost. But I think,
but you might like it more.
Okay, well, it's going to be sped up. It's going to be crazy. Every game is going to be like an NFL Sunday almost.
You may actually like it more.
You might. Well, how many times have we had the conversation of, oh my God? I mean, there's a phrase that we've heard forever, the dog days of summer in baseball. Well, that is the opposite this year if this happens.
And maybe that's the point. Maybe all of a sudden, because there's a sense of urgency, you're only playing in 50, 60 games, whatever it is, have an extra couple teams in the playoffs. So now, depending on how long those series are, you'll have, you know, some manufactured, you know, Game 7 situations, which every owner loves.
You're still going to have to go through a playoff run. To win a World Series, you're still going to have to go through even a bigger playoff run than maybe even normal.
Yeah, but this thing would be so wide open, Dave. I mean, it would be anybody's guess as to who could win a championship this year. Because if you talk about any of the teams that we're expecting to compete for a title, if they have just one injury to a key player, you're talking about changing the complexion of their entire season.
You go on the IL, you're out for a quarter of the year.
If you're back in two weeks,
right?
That's what I'm saying.
Listen, it would be different, and nobody's arguing that. But you're telling me we get to game 13, Yankees, Blue Jays, Sunday afternoon. You can sit outside and watch and put your feet up. You wouldn't be all about that right now?
No, of course I would be, Dave. I mean, I want to see baseball come back just like everybody else. I just think that when you start changing the season that dramatically, I mean, you have to question the integrity of it. And I'm not quite sure how we'll look back on it, but I guess the win for the players and the owners would be the fact that they did come back and play baseball in a time where everybody was pushing for it, just based on what we're going through right now.
You don't come back at all, and I think you have a huge problem.
Yes.
You come back in a way that a lot of people don't love, Rick. 50 games, 47 games, 59 games, whatever it is, and I think people are okay to tolerate that. I think.
No, I would say I probably know that the people will be into it. I mean, you know, the purists, who they're not in danger of losing, won't love it, but they'll still watch it. I mean, you're trying to generate interest with the casual fan. Mm-hmm. So if all of a sudden you have, I mean, this artificial sense of urgency because it's going to be a shorter season, and you'll have more teams involved in the playoffs because you're going to get a couple extra teams in the playoffs. I mean, you have more people, you know, that still think they have an opportunity, so more people engaged. And let's not forget, too, the owners have already gotten, I mean, a couple concessions that they've been looking for in this entire, you know, back and forth. Players now willing to be mic'd up, which I don't think they would have been. And then you're also going to get expanded playoffs for the next two seasons. You're going to get the, you know, all-star/home run derby game during the, like, I mean, the players, without even knowing it, have given the owners already some of the stuff they've been looking for. Now it's just the owners coming to a point where they feel comfortable with the money and how many games it's going
to
be.
Right. Yeah, and the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking, and it's clear to me that the owners are going to manipulate this thing however they have to in order to suppress player salaries and give themselves some cost certainty. Like, that's clear that is a priority for them. We want to cap how much player costs are going to be in this truncated season. And however we have to do that is how we have to do that. Now it seems like they're willing to do that by cutting down on the number of regular season games and just banking on being able to have the postseason to try to make the lion's share of their revenue this year.
Today on ESPN Daily, hear the latest in the story of Major League Baseball's return. Jeff Passan breaks down MLB and player negotiations, plus the fate of the minor leagues. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's bring him in. Andy from Merrick with a nice, fun diversion for a couple of minutes. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. I'm doing well. Yesterday, we served the youth. Today, we're going to focus on the veterans, the guys who have compiled some big numbers in their career.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the big man, Chris. You there?
I'm here, Andy.
All right. What former teammate of yours has played the most games in Dallas Cowboy history?
Ooh, the most games in Dallas Cowboys history. Huh. Would that be one Larry Allen?
Not Larry Allen. This gentleman played for the Cowboys up and through last year.
Did he work for ESPN?
He was an ESPN employee for a bit.
Witten.
That's correct. Way to pick up your teammates, guys.
You said Darren Woodson?
No, Witten.
Jason Witten.
Ah, yeah. Jason Witten. Okay.
Gotcha. Way to go, Rick. All right, Rick. We're going to put you back on the ice.
Okay.
Ray Bourque holds many of the longevity records for the Boston Bruins.
Yep.
Games, assists, points scored. But neither Bourque or Esposito is the number one goal scorer in Bruins history. Can you name him?
Ooh. No, this is...
like the noises.
Now you just pigeonhole me as a Bruins fan. Most goals by a Boston Bruin. I want to say Rosie Rogiska. I'm just kidding. Got the chance to meet Rosie Rogiska. All-time goals leader. I'm going to go with... Is it Busick?
It is Johnny Busick.
And it's a wide margin between him and second, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a pretty big margin. And Johnny Busick, not to be confused with Johnny Boychuk. All right, Dave. Baseball question for you.
All right. By the way, Rick is cleaning up today. I'd like his help in this question. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, Rick's got two on the board here. Dave, your baseball question is, Mike Schmidt holds many of the Philadelphia Phillies' offensive records. Home runs, ribbies, runs scored. But he's number two in all-time hits. Can you tell me what former MVP is the Phillies' all-time hit leader?
Get a Phillies question, huh?
Yeah, Dave Rosenberg.
Is it Jimmy Rollins?
It is Jimmy Rollins. Since you guys went 3 for 3, we looking for a bonus question?
We'd love a bonus question.
All right, it goes basketball. Isaiah Thomas holds many of the Detroit Pistons' offensive records, but he's only number two in games played. Can any of you name the all-time leader in games played for the Detroit Pistons?
Boy.
Most games by a Detroit Piston. Dave, you're going to have to bail us out with this one, I think.
I don't know that Dave knows this one. Is it Dumars? I don't know. Hang on.
States Joe Dumars.
Oh, all right, then I'll go Dumars.
I am the smartest man alive!
Guys, 4 for 4, fantastic job. Stay healthy as always.
There you go. That is, of course, Andy from Merrick. Terrific stuff.
I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't have the answer to the question, though.
I don't think you heard it properly, to be honest.
I don't think anyone's mind is working at 100% at this point.
No, you're probably right about that, Rico.
Yeah, I mean, Dave is just special. Like, Dave doesn't all the emotions that your brain usually is involved with, Dave, that doesn't exist in Dave's brain.
Yeah, I can block things out.
He's thrown that out.
He does a really good job at compartmentalizing.
Yeah. I mean, for those 4 minutes, you know what? It brings me back to, like, for those 4 minutes, something that makes me very happy, having a little bit of knowledge, and I'm able to just streamline it and then go back to real life at 11 o'clock.
You should work for a team, and I'm being honest. Your brain is being underutilized. I feel like with the analytics and everything else, like you deserve to be working for a team.
Like a Paul DePodesta kind of?
Something like that. I mean, I could imagine.
Hopefully
like,
a little
up
better
charts.
Batting average than him.
Yeah.
I've seen him. Yeah, I've actually seen him swing a bat. I'm saying more like front office stuff. I wouldn't want him like putting on hitting clinics.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
You know what?
You had one good softball game. I don't want to hear you.
I was
one
terrific.
Good softball game.
Last softball game, I might have led the team in hits.
I think you were 3-2 for 3.
I think I went 2-for-2, yeah.
That's what happens when you have 75 people on your team. You only get up a couple times. But, yeah, we got destroyed, though. I mean, so congratulations.
I don't even remember the winning and losing. I remember I had hits.
They mocked us. They could only hit 2 home runs in an inning. We got mocked.
Look at the professional softball players.
I wouldn't say they're perfect. Yeah, they're good. Yeah, they're definitely good.
They play an entire tournament just to meet us in the finals of the tournament. We need some kind of...
It doesn't really make sense if you think about it. We probably should play the team that didn't make it all the way to the finals. We should play the team that got like eliminated first.
Right. If you went 0-5, you play us.
That's what we want.
The other team can stay around to give us pointers, but if you were the worst of the worst, you play us.
That's what we like. Exactly.
In the finals.
Right.
Yeah, why are we playing the best? You're right. It really is completely counterintuitive. We go up against the elite.
We like to make it difficult.
Players.
Yeah, we'd like to make it as difficult as possible, be embarrassed, and then on top of it have at least one major injury a year.
Right.
Don almost died.
Lyons. I mean,
Marty Lyons broke his face open. Carl
Don being hit with that softball was scary.
It sounded like a 2x4 got broken when he got hit in the chest with that softball. I thought he was dead.
The Marty Lyons. I wasn't there for Don, but Marty Lyons was awful because he went down like he was shot. And then he just crumbled at the plate, and then he got up and there was blood all over the place.
And he kept playing.
Oh, of course. He's Marty Lyons.
Now, I'm not sure golf spikes on that. I'm not sure soft golf cleats on that field are really a good idea.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.